Good morning to everyone. So we're discussing this morning an aspect of Megillas Esther. Purim comes a week from yesterday. And I want to look at the two queens in the story, Vashti and Esther. Now, the Megillah is, in addition to being a part of Tanakh, an exquisite story. Just from our discussion before we started, you see there's so many different nuances. But you're having the Megillah layer upon layer of complexity, with even seemingly insignificant details, all somehow central to the story. Like the most profound parts of the Torah, the questions on it are all insightful, every question. And even if we think we know the story already, nonetheless, we can uncover new layers by asking questions that sound very simple on the surface, but yet, because we learned the story when we were so young, and we're so familiar with it, we're often made to sit back and say, yeah, why? Why is that? As a child, it might make sense. At different parts in our lives, it may make less sense. Let's understand a few aspects of the two queens. First of all, why did Ahasuerus want Vashti to appear before him? All right. So it's the end of the story. After the great mishteh in the second party, the second mishteh that followed the farewell mishteh, then in Perek Aleph, Pasuk Yud Aleph, Ahasuerus has a great idea. He sends his sarisim, Hamisharsim is Pnei HaMelech, Pasuk Yud Aleph, Lohavias Vashti HaMalko Lefnei HaMelech Becheser Malchus. Let Vashti the queen come before the king, Becheser Malchus, wearing the royal crown. The implication of Gemara is that he wanted her to wear the royal crown and nothing else. Laharos Ha'amim La'asarim Es Yofio Ki Tovas Marehi. To show the nations and the officers, the ministers of the various provinces who were there, her beauty, because in fact, Tovas Marehi, she was exceedingly beautiful. What in the world would possess Ahasuerus to make such a request? Granted, the wine was flowing freely and profusely, and it's now 180 days, 6 months into an orgy of drinking and food and partying. But Ahasuerus always had a very keen sense of Malchus. Certainly he wanted to retain his Malchus and the image of the king as a uniter, as a symbol of respect of all the provinces. So she was the Malka. She was the queen. On one level, it would make as much sense to ask her to do that as it would be to ask him to do that. So why, in fact, would he do that? Adding to that, as we know from Chazal, she was royalty. He was not. She was the daughter of Belshazzar. She was the great-granddaughter of Nebuchadnezzar. In fact, Chazal says she was the one who told Ahasuerus to stop the building of the Beis HaMikdash. He said, you're destroying my great-grandfather's master work, so to speak, his destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. So when you gave permission to start the Beis HaMikdash, Gemara says it was Haman's, in fact, the pasuk in Ezra Nehemiah, that Haman's children, they karasitna, they informed against the Jews who had started to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash with Ahasuerus's permission. They said that the Jews in the province of Judea are rebelling against you. Ahasuerus stopped it. All right, so between Vashti, between the sons of Haman, it was all stopped. So she, in fact, was Malchus. She was royalty. We could say he wanted to degrade her, but what normal person wants to do that? Now, before we cry for Vashti, we should understand that the Gemara saw this as Mida Keneged Mida. That was one of the ways that she demeaned the Jewish girls. Rashi says, "Batimain Hamalkov Vashti." Rabboseinu Amru Lefisha Parcha Batzaras. She refused because she was afflicted with Tzaras. The Gemara says she grew a tail and didn't want to be exposed like that. But Rashi continues, Lefisha Haisa Mifashetes Benos Yisrael Arumos Voseva Hem Melacha B'Shabbos Nigzar Alesh Atipashet Aruma B'Shabbos. because she forced Jewish girls to work for her in the nude on Shabbos. So too here is Bayom HaShvi'i Ketov Lev HaMelech Bayayin. So he ordered her to appear before him in the exact same way. The question, of course, is why? Why would he want to demean her like this? I mean, if it's to show that he's the Melech and she's Vashti HaMalka, which the Pasuk emphasizes, so first of all, he had already shown he's the Melech HaChashverosh. That was the point of the whole party. The Megillah begins that way. Hu HaChashverosh HaMolech Mehodu VaKush Sheva VeEsir Medina. He was the rule of the world. One of the three people, as I'll say, who ruled the entire world at one time. He was the despot who controlled all 127 provinces. And we understand why he would make a party like this over 6 months when you're ruling over such disparate, far-flung provinces. The whole civilized world, basically from the area of Italy and North Africa all the way to China. There's really nothing in common that these nations have but the despot. So nations that are composed of different ethnic groups are very often rife for dissension and rebellion because they do not pay any sincere deference or respect to the ruler. The ruler is not one of them. That's why all these nations that are conglomerates always break up, always in violence. And you wonder why? Because they don't want to live under someone else. I mean, we saw it in our day with the Soviet Union. The Soviet Union disintegrated at 15 republics, but each republic, Georgia, had nothing to do with Tajikistan. Completely different in every aspect of life, language, culture, history. So when the disintegration came, it was obvious they would disintegrate. We have it today, in fact, in Libya. That's one of the problems that Gaddafi, that Mashugan is dealing with. Libya is just a group of tribes held together by a name. Like Iraq itself has the same problems, the Shia and the Sunnis and the Kurds. It's the same thing. It's three different ethnic groups that were told by the British, by Churchill, in fact, in 1922, here's your country, live together. All right, so you have a dictator who'll kill you if you don't listen to him, like an Ahasuerus, that works. When the dictator's gone, and Yugoslavia is another example, then all the ethnic groups come out. What Ahasuerus tried to do was preempt that by giving everyone a feeling that they're part of one greater nation, Persia. Different provinces, but here they come. They all see his greatness. They're all happy. Ve'es yekar tiferes gedulaso. Everyone should see Osher Kod Malchuso, Vesikar Teferes Gedul, so that sees great wealth and the glory of his kingdom and his majesty. 180 days, 6 months, to have the ministers, the ruling authorities of each of the provinces be wined and dined, but also feel that they have a share in greater Persia. That's what Ahasuerus accomplished. By the end of these 6 months, all right, what more does he have to do? There's not been a cross word during that half year. Everyone sees his malchus. So what does he really add by trotting out Vashti in this way to humiliate her? By the way, I think we discussed this a few years ago, you'll notice how, again, the Megillah is so fine-tuned. In Pasuk Yud Aleph, Ahasuerus' intention was Lohavias Vashti HaMalkah Lefnei HaMelech, that Vashti, the queen, should come out wearing her royal crown. But when she refused, Batimoein HaMalkah Vashti, it's not Vashti the queen, it's Queen Vashti. She saw herself as royalty, and so she refused. But in fact, why did Ahasuerus request this? And secondly, why didn't she come? You're looking at me like you wouldn't come, but knowing that she's going to be killed. You're dealing with a person who's not at all hesitant to kill people. That's how he came to power, Ahasuerus. That's how he will retain power. So she knew that he was of a bent, of an inclination, that at the slightest provocation, he'll kill you. That ends the problem. You don't need to have a cabinet meeting, a discussion, what to do. In fact, he did, because she was the queen. But nonetheless, he killed her anyway. So why would she not come knowing, or at least fearing, that the possibility was death? As we said, Rashi said she was afflicted with tzaras. The Gemara says she had a zanav, a tail. But even so, if she came out in all her glory, a leper, or with a tail, who's that a bad reflection on? On Ahasuerus. It's a bad reflection on the king. So she could say, hey, you want me to come out? Sure, I'll show everyone what your queen is like. Here I am, tail and all. Now, of course, a tail is a very unusual adornment for a woman. At least in my experience. Yes. It just happened now. So, of course, Chazal are giving us ideas. Tzaras is always a punishment. It's a nega. So here the tzaras, in the immediate sense, is designed because she was very proud. She's not going to go out and humiliate herself when she's not looking her finest. What about a tail? What's a tail? What's a tail symbol of? Symbolic of? An animal. Exactly. Let's listen to what Rav Aviner writes on this topic. He says, you shouldn't prove from here Sha'adam Baminakov. You shouldn't prove from here that men descend from monkeys. A topic last weekend, alright? Avalifamim akov bamin adam. Sometimes the monkey comes from the person. Klomar. Yesh bene adam habin nagim kikofim. There are people act like monkeys. People act like wild animals. And you read this, it's like, this is over 10 years ago, but I guess what's the difference? Gamba artsenu yesh goyim rabim ka'ela shiratzim anashim nashim v'taf. We have in our land also people, non-Jews like this, who murder men, women, and children. Hayim elu b'nei adam? Are they really human beings? He says, no. So the Rambam writes in the Mora that Adam Arishon holid b'meshach me'al shloshim shana sheidim. He also mentioned this Friday night during Gerald Schroeder. During the 130 years that Adam separated from Chava, he procreated with the other human-like creatures, and they gave birth to demons. Alright? And Shais was different. Shais, after 30 years, became, was a progeny of Adam and Chava, so he is Kitsamo Kid Muso, Kitsalam Elokim, fine, but the others not. Before Shais, all these creatures that Adam fathered were his lookalikes, but without a Tzalam Elokim. So Rambam says in the Mora, these are animals who have human form. They look like human beings, but inside they're wild animals. And he quoted this the other night. This is the Mora, part 1, chapter 7. And we see this. The people who, they look like human beings, but their demeanor, their inside, their value system, you can even use that word, the way they look at other people is from the perspective of a chaya, vicious, violent. I mean, you have to reach a level of, you can't even say degradation, you have to say inhumanity, to take knives and slash the throat of a 3-month-old. Kind of a wild animal. Even wild animals are not on that madrega. So what is the Gemara saying to us about Vashti? That was her level. She had the veneer of a human being, of Malchus. But inside, and you could see the way she treated her Jewish maidservants, vicious, violent, brutal, harsh. That's the zanav that Vashti had. She was a ben adam, but she really had chaya within her, chaya, the chaya within. Now mind that thought, because we'll see that Esther partook of a similar structure, exactly opposite. But we'll get back to that in a moment. So here now, we have the question. Knowing that she's going to be killed, why does she still refuse? That, in fact, makes little sense. It wasn't tznius on our part. If this is what he wants, and it's really bad for Ahasuerus's malchus that she does it, if this is what she wants, I'm just listening to you. Knowing, fearing at least, that he would kill her, so why did she refuse? Next question. Ahasuerus had a very precise security protocol, as we know from the story. You could not visit him, you could not enter his chamber without permission. This, of course, is a point that Esther makes quite strenuously to Mordechai in Perek Dalet, Pasuk Yud Aleph. Kol Avdei HaMelech, when at first she demurs, he asks her to go, and she says, one second. Kol Avdei HaMelech, Ve'am Medinos HaMelech Yodim, every servant of the king, every person in every province of the kingdom, everyone knows, Asher Kol Ish V'Isha, Asher Yavo Al HaMelech El Chatzer HaPnimis, Asher Lo Yikare, that any person, man or woman, who comes to the king, to the inner courtyard, without first being called, Achaz dasol hamis. There's no questions asked. Death. You are killed immediately. That is a man who's obsessed with security. Levad me'asher yoshit lo hamelach eshavir hazahal v'choyo. Except it could be, at the king's discretion, he's able to extend his scepter, and then the person lives. It's completely discretionary. It's completely arbitrary. A better word. It's completely capricious, because that's his personality. And I have not been called to come to the king yet for 30 days. Right? So that has a dual meaning. I haven't been called for 30 days, so maybe he'll kill me as soon as he sees me, because he hasn't wanted me. Or, I haven't been called in 30 days, loves me, he's going to call me any day now, so why push the issue? Let me wait for him to call me, and then I'll go and I'll take care of business. That's what she says. Yet, Esther's afraid. But Mordechai says, very dramatic words, Al tadami v'nashech. It's not about you. You can't worry about your life. You're not going to protect yourself if we're all killed. If you're silent now, so revach v'atzal yamot v'adim v'kam acher v'atvei savich tavedu. Umi yodeya im leis kazos higat l'machos. If you're silent, then God will send some other means of saving us. You'll be lost, and who knows, even Ezra's chat, who knows im leis kazos higat l'machos, if for this very purpose that you have arrived at this royal position. So now Esther says to Mordechai, okay, you convinced me. Let's all fast for 3 days. I'll go to the king. I'll take my chances. Whatever, I'm lost to someone. Lost to you, lost to everybody. Something's going to happen. I don't know. Now she's in. Finally, the king sees her. Pasuk Beis, Barakai. Vayhi chiros ha-melech es Esther ha-malko omedes bechotzer nasochen be'inav. King sees Esther standing in the courtyard. Right away, again, she finds favor in his eyes. Where do we see that word before? That exactly was Esther's quality. Chen. If you go back to Pasuk in Perek Beis, Pasuk Tesvav uvahagia Torah Esther Basavichael Dod Mordechai Shalokach Lo Luvas Lavol HaMelech. So she didn't ask anything, just said to Haggai, send me as is. Vati Esther Nosei Schein Be'enei Kol Ro'eho. Esther was a Nosei Schein. She bore a certain chein. You understand what that is? Grace, whatever it is, everyone saw it. Next, Vayahav Esther HaMelech HaSesem Yikol HaNashim Vatiso Chein V'Chesed L'Fan Mikol B'Sulos. Again, he's chose her because of the Chein Chesed she has. By the way, should know, apropos of our earlier discussion, the Gemara says that Esther was not that attractive. One opinion of the Gemara is that she was a Yirak Rokes. She had a greenish complexion. All right, not that attractive. That you also don't find in the customs these days. So then what attracted Ahasuerus to her? Chein. Well, rather, her to Ahasuerus? Chein. Chein is a certain quality that the person has. We'll discuss what it is. That's what Esther had. She had chein. you know, I was I spoke a few weeks ago at the singles function that was here, and one of the questions they had is, let's say there's no attraction, should you pursue it? So I said there's a difference between no attraction and repulsion. If you find a person repugnant, then clearly there's no hope. But if there's no attraction, attraction can grow. Why can attraction grow? Because of chaim. You get to know a person. Through personality, through midos, people become more attractive. So don't just be superficial and be done with it. Look a little beyond it. That's what Ahasuerus did, strange as it sounds, because Ashkacha, with Esther. He looked beyond the surface and there's something about her that struck him. Okay, now he sees the same thing. Back to Perek Hey, Pasuk Peis, the same chain. Vayoshet Hamelech Lester Eshavit Hazov Asher Biyado Vatikrav Esther Vatiga Berosh Hashavit. All right, that was the only exception to the security regime. If the king extends his scepter, you live. He did it to Esther. She drew near. She touched the head of the scepter. She's in like Flynn. What do you think she should do now? Having risked her life to get there, what should she do? Make her request. Tell the king why she's there. No. Strange if you think about it. We all know the story. But who knows if she'll... maybe he'll say no to the request. And another party, I'm dieting. That's not the time. And maybe she'll say, okay, then what? I'll come back. But then she's in the same position. Just to wait again. Now she's there. She risked everything to get there. And he says to her, Ma bakashaseh chatzir malchus v'sayi v'yinasaloch. Maloch aser malko. Now you're here. What is it? V'atomer aser imal amelach tov. All Esther says, if it pleases the king, Yavo amelach v'haman ayom ela mishteh asher asisi lo. Let the king and Haman come to the mishteh prepared for him. That's it? For that she risked her life? Ahasuerus must think she's a little foolish, all right? But what was Esther thinking? If you're there already, at this great sacrifice, so then do what you have to do. Make your request. I'm not sure that Mordechai knew that this was the game she was playing. Mishteh today, Mishteh tomorrow. Why? Once you're there, you should say what you want. It becomes very convoluted. Now, it's an echo of Mordechai saying to her, now to think, what Mordechai was his clinching argument? Umi odea im la'ez kazos, yigat ha-malchus. Who knows if for this you've achieved your position, you're there. If you could say to her, had he been listening from the outside, Umi odea im la'ez kazos, yigat ha-malchus, now you finally have an audience, and you're throwing it away. You know who's going to answer? Take advantage of the opportunity that you have now. Yet Esther doesn't do that. What does she do? She plays with him. I prepared for this by looking at the Malbim and the comments of Rav Avner and a very new book that came out. I don't know if it's published yet. I got an advance copy. I imagine it's published this month for Purim by Rabbi David Foreman, who's a great teacher of Tanakh, really a very insightful Talmud Chacham. And he notes a point, I have to say, I guess I'm a first mention, I never noticed it before. Esther says something to Ahasuerus that right away catches attention. Imal HaMelech Tov, Yavo HaMelech V'Haman Hayom Ela Mishteh Asher Asisi Lo. Let the king and Haman come to the feast I've made for him. Who's the him? It's left ambiguous. Or Ahasuerus hears this now. Let the king come and Haman to Mishteh for him. Was the him for me, you know, the royal third person, or is the him from Haman? In which case, what's this deal with Esther and Haman? Now contrast this with just a few psukim later. They finally have the Mishteh, Pasuk Yud Aleph, and Ahasuerus says again, "Nu, what's up? Im matzasi chaim b'einei ha-melech, v'im al ha-melech tov l'seis l'she'ei l'si v'lasos v'bakosh asi. If it pleases the king, and if you want to do me this, answer this request, Yavah Melech v'Haman el Mishteh Asher Aseh Lohem U'machar Aseh Kedvar HaMelech. Now she uses the plural. Let the king and Haman come to the Mishteh that I made for them, not him. okay, is better or worse? Worse. Because if whatever Ahasuerus might have thought, he might have thought, all right, just, you know, she's using inexact general speech. Asher as Asher Asisi lo. Lo, she must mean me, all right? Could mean Haman, but she most likely means me. Now, when she says Lohem, she means no doubt both of them. And now she's equating Ahasuerus and Haman. He suggests one thing, that it's possible, and again, Ahasuerus is paranoid, that he would sense in the nuance of her language that something was going on between Esther and Mordechai, and what would he do? Kill the both of them. No trial, or very quick trial. Execution, then trial. Ancient style. Esther and Haman, right? Kill the both of them. Avadati. She's lost. He's gone also. He's gone. His plan dies with him. And so she saved the Jewish people. That's one suggestion that he makes. But he makes a better suggestion. And we go back to the other question. What does she mean by saying Asher Asisi Lo and then Asher Es Elohem? Why does she switch? Obviously, from her perspective, it's intentional. And why, in fact, is she engaging in these dilatory tactics? Once she comes, finally, accepts her, come to the Mishnah, at the Mishnah, come again to the Mishnah, talk already. No one likes people, just they can't get to the story. Say what you want, ask your question. Let me give you a little background. No, don't give me background, just ask the question first. Maybe read. It needs no background. Tell us what you want. Ask me more than the Mishnah. One other question, which is always interesting, that we take for granted because we heard the story when we were very young. What's unique about Esther? That she's chosen by Ahasuerus. What's unique? Ahasuerus is paranoid. Again, he took power by killing his predecessor. And he was always afraid of plots against the king. That's why Mordechai became celebrated, because of big son and Seresh, and exposing that plot. And here you have the king say, bring the naros besulos from every place, the afkeda melech pikidim mechom medinos malchuso. Let the king designate officers in every province of the kingdom. V'yikvetzuas kol naro besulo tovas marel shushan abiro. Let every officer, every governor, select from a pageant the top 2, 3, 5, 10 women and send them to Shushan HaBira. What a job. That's a job for the ancient world. I think it exists today also, by the way. But that's a job. Find the most beautiful women and bring them to this pageant. Alright? So what happens? Very dutifully, the officers come and they bring the pkidim. And there's almost a regular parade of these women coming constantly. Each province is contributing its own beautiful women, except for Esther. She's the unknown. No past. Sort of like Obama. Ein Esther Mageres Molarato Vesamo Kasher Tzivola Mordechai. Esther does not tell her birthplace, her nation, as Mordechai commanded her. In fact, Mordechai said to her directly, when she's taken, lo higida seres amoves molarato, ki Mordechai tziva Allah asher lo sagid. Mordechai commanded not to say anything. Very nice. She listens to her husband. That's excellent. Why did Ahasuerus tolerate this? Such a person who's so obsessed with his security, how is it possible that he would bring into the palace a complete unknown? It makes no sense. We saw it's Ashkocha. Because this way, had Haman known that she was a Jew, and even so, that's all fine and good. But why would a sensible Ahasuerus do such a thing? And again, a part of the story that we always get wrong with Ahasuerus is a drunken fool. The Gemara says he's a Rasha, and the Gemara says he's a Pikeach. He's a very clever person. Nobody gets to power if they're imbeciles. He's a very clever fellow. So no one stays in power, especially if they're not intelligent. So he knew exactly what he was doing. Why would he tolerate this? Very out of character. But he chose Esther despite this. I mean, this could have been either a deal breaker or a head decapitator. You're not going to tell me where you're from. Goodbye. We have to know this. Everyone has a background check. You have no background check. You can't get into the White House without a background check. What, right? Much less, except for the Salahis. But you can't get in. And I've been there a few times. You need to identify. The truth is, easier to get into the White House than onto an airplane these days. But nonetheless, still they want to know your passport, your bank. In advance, have to know all your numbers and check off a list. You can't just walk in. See, he's not only going to let her walk in without a background check, let her compete without a background check. He's going to marry her without a background check. Why did he? There are plenty of psulos there. He liked this green-complexioned woman who might have been 70 years old. Sharon is right. She had chen. What's chen? Chen's likability. Now, in the entertainment business, is something known as the Q factor. Have you heard that? Q rating. The Q rating is a poll that they take about every personality, for the news, entertainment, as to how people look at them and like them. Either like them or don't like them, and they're graded on that. For example, the broadcasters always have high Q ratings. When it starts to drop, they get someone new. Esther had a very high Q rating. Not IQ, high Q. They liked her. You looked at her, there was something in there that was to like. Harav says here, it was a kedusha pnimit. It's an inner holiness to her. There's a dimension in her personality that was very winsome. And that really is part of likability. It's not just externals. It's not the exterior. Likability is something that comes from the inside. And we see this in people as well. And as I told the singles a few weeks ago, someone can be very bubbly and vivacious, and their whole exterior takes on a different dimension as well. They look better because they're happy, they're joyous, they're friendly, they're outgoing, they're charming. All that is chen. Chen is a quality that makes people want to like you. Can you acquire chen? Are you born with chen? Some people are born with chen, that's true, but you can't acquire chen. It's not like grace. You can't acquire chen. By making yourself into a likable human being, that's what Esther had. And because of that, she became very versatile. And she appealed to another aspect of Ahasuerus's need, and that is that every province should claim her as their own. And that's what the Medrash said. Of all the provinces, when I said, who is she from? They'd say, yeah, we remember she was when she was 60. No, remember when she was a child. Yeah, sure, she grew up with us. Every province claimed her. And she had an appearance, apparently, that lent itself to being from, you know, Southern Europe or Western Asia. She just looked, she had a face that she could have been part of any ethnic group. So now we understand that why she was selected, but why did the king accept this lack of knowledge about something so basic as her origin, her national, her native ethnic group? So now we see all the details come together, and let me show you some of the Rabbi Foreman wrote. Very interesting chakira. Again, we know, and everything comes together in this one, maybe two different ideas. So we know that we already discussed Ahasuerus wanted to consolidate his rule through the Mishnah. He had all these unrelated, disparate provinces. They really have nothing in common with each other, except you have a tyrant ruling over all of you. So how do you accomplish that? Through a feast. You make a party. Everyone feels good at the party. Everyone sees his majesty. Everyone is treated well. Everyone is treated equally. Wine, women, song. Everybody gets exactly what they want. Everyone is told, who works in the palace, lasos kirtzon ish v'ish, to do the will of each and every man, right? What's the will of each and every man? It just comes down to one thing, but everyone was accommodated with everything they wanted. How better to make people feel appreciated and loyal to the king? after partying now for 6 months with the king, he makes another, even more spectacular farewell party of just 1 week's duration. That itself is in the Megillah. Let's see. It's 180 days. And here he invited also the locals. Shushan Abira, the people live in Shushan, the capital. All right. What's the message that the king wants to send to everyone as they are leaving the party? Well, firstly, the king wants to say that he's great, that they already saw, Malchus. The king wants to show everyone that we're one kingdom. And how does he do that? By portraying himself, the king, as the living symbol of the nation. He's the symbol of the nation. He is the man in whom every province can find something with which they can identify, they can respect, and they can idolize. Ahasuerus is our man. He's the man for all seasons, but he's really the man for all provinces. Every province, and the governors go back, and of course the media was there, and they all report back in their local provinces. He's great, the king loves us, he's sensitive to our needs, he is Persia. So now he has an idea to make everyone feel even more intimate with him. Who does he send to fetch Vashti? So Megillah says he sends the Sarisim, his cabinet. Rav Avinah mentions, by the way, that he thinks that bothered Vashti also. That in fact, if the king wanted her to appear in this way, he should have asked her himself. Then she might have listened. But he sends Sarisim. Rav Avinah says, no, Sarisim are not low officials. That's the cabinet. They are Roei Pnei HaMelech. They're the king's intimates, the ones the king most trusts, the one with whom the king surrounds himself. Hamishorsim is Pnei HaMelech HaHashverosh. They're the ones who are told Lahavias Vashti Makalot Pnei HaMelech. Why? Because just like he's the living symbol of Persia, so too is she, as the Malka. She's the living symbol of Persia. She's the feminine embodiment of the Persian ideal. So she is the symbol of the empire in its feminine sense. Now he writes very interestingly that a lot of nations have that. Certainly, the faux monarchies that are still extant in the world today, they keep them around, like the British, for example, as a symbol of what was, what is. But he says, Angel, we have such a symbol in America as well. What's our symbol? Lady Liberty, the symbol of America. It's a woman, crown, torch, greenish complexion, right? he didn't say that though. Greenish complexion, she's a symbol of America. Immigrants come to America, what do they see? Statue of Liberty.
Greenish complexion.
They know it's America. Stands for liberty, freedom, justice. Vashti, from Ahasuerus' perspective, was the symbol of Persia, and so he saw this as a matter of state. That's why he sent the cabinet. A matter of state, how people will feel a close connection to Persia if they see this woman of beauty in her birthday suit, but wearing the crown. Lavias Vashim al Kol Efemel Pecheser Malchus. She wear the crown, and then they'll see. So of course he's a little off. All right. And the simplest answer is that Vashti refused to be objectified in this way because she saw herself more than just as a symbol of Persia. She saw herself as Malchus, and she was extremely arrogant and dictatorial in her own way, so she rejected it. Why did she reject it, knowing that she would be killed or fearing that she would be killed? Because people do those things to destroy her psyche, to destroy her, the self-illusions that she has is to destroy her anyway. There's no difference in her mind between the dead Vashti and the humiliated Vashti. Since the royalty itself. Once you take away, like they say, no man is a hero to his valet. Once you take, you strip the allures of majesty, then we're all the same. So the king is about all those allures, all those sort of phony dimensions of greatness. That's what Malchus is. So she could not handle that. To be demeaned in that way would have destroyed her anyway. She was the real one, exactly. He was not. That's correct. That's correct. She felt she could not be able to live psychologically in a humiliated state. So better take her chances and be killed. Who was she replaced with? Esther. Esther. Okay. Mordechai, who of course was a tremendous Talmud Chacham, is a member of the Sanhedrin, spoke all the languages, as we know, from Big Son and Seresh. Mordechai recognizes that's the role that Vashti plays. He saw Ahasuerus, who was also a minister, but a lower level minister. He knew that Ahasuerus is not simply drunk, inebriated, sane. He knew there was a matter of state that was at hand, and that's why he wanted to do it. Lohigida Asteris Amavis Molarata, Ki Mordechai Tziva Aleh Asher Lo Sahid. Why did Mordechai tell her not to reveal her identity? It's because if she's unknown, then she could be a better symbol of Persia than another woman who simply comes from the provinces. A woman who comes from the provinces, she's always identified with that province. All right? You think back, by the way, well, Abdul, but King Hussein's wife, Noor, she was Palestinian. A lot of the Jordanians always resented her because of that. Because they're Bedouin, they're Hashemites, they're not Palestinian. If the queen is identified with a sect in the society and not society itself, that itself might arouse both suspicions and enmity. So Mordechai said to her, be a feminine symbol of the nation, belong to no one. You'll belong to all of them. Sure enough, Ahasuerus sensed that's exactly what he was looking for. He was not looking for another woman who would come in with qualities particular to her, like Vashti did as the descendant of Malchus, as a Babylonian. Nor was he looking for a Tarsi or an Indian or whatever. He didn't know what he was looking for, but he saw chen in Esther, likability. One of the things he liked about her was that she was very coy and she had no past. If she had no past, then she understood as well as Ahasuerus did that we need a symbol of all Persia and not just a Jewish woman or a Russian woman or someone else. Now, yes. Right. What's the chesed? That's a good question, because I don't know how into chesed they were. And you say chesed, I'll mention this one time, it's not mentioned elsewhere. Right. But chesed means a kindness. I guess we shouldn't make any demands on Haggai, and she asked for nothing. She was selfless in that sense. So now we come to the next point. Then she comes with Ahasuerus. She has chen. She's a high Q rating. She's very likable. She gets in. All right? Now, what possible argument could she make to Ahasuerus? What should she say? Esther realizes going in that she has only one of two possible arguments she can make at that particular time, the first encounter with Ahasuerus. One is the moral argument. You're going to kill a whole nation? You're going to kill one of your provinces? Will that work with Ahasuerus? Of course not. Because he's completely indifferent to the extermination of one of his provinces. That was his response to Mordechai. He didn't even ask, who are you going to kill? Haman said, there's an Am Echad Nefuzam Forad Beinu Amim, Bechol Medinos Malchusecha, Dosem Shinos Mikolom, Dosem Melchein Amosim, Melchein Shavel Anicham, get rid of them. There's one province that's going to cause you trouble. And he says, I'll give you money. All right? I'll give money to the Oseh HaMelacha. What a nice euphemism. The doers of the work. Doesn't say what the work is. He knows what the work is. You don't say it. We'll give you money. We'll get rid of them. Says to Bayitnol Hamam and Amdas Agig Sarah Yudim, he gives him his tabas. Hakesef Nasunloch Do whatever you want. That's the extent of the interest Ahasuerus takes in the extermination of one of his provinces, and better said, that is the extent of his moral engagement in this question. Give me money, don't talk to me, do whatever you want. The moral argument would not work, because Ahasuerus had already acquiesced to genocide without even asking one question about it. Zesta has another argument to make. That's the ethnic argument. It's my people are going to be destroyed. If she says, my people are going to be destroyed, then right away the veneer is gone, the facade is gone. And Ahasuerus says to her, your people, I only took you as queen because you're representative of all the people. Now you're concerned with one particular little ethnic group. That's not what, and Jews no less, that's not what I'm looking for in a queen. That would undermine Ahasuerus's attraction to Esther. Would undermine the very reason why he chose Esther in the first place. So there was only one other thing to do, and it wasn't a plan. It actually was exploitation of a bad midah, which was what? Kinah, jealousy. A paranoid is always jealous, always fearful. So Esther knew only way to get through the Ahasuerus was to play mind games with him. And boy, did it work wonders. Yavo ha-melech v'haman ayom ala mishtar asher asisi lo. Who's the lo? Him? Is it me, Ahasuerus, or is it Haman? I don't know. But that plants a seed. And then he comes. Then it says, Lohem, I'll make a mishta for the both of you. For them? That meaning she is putting me on the same level as Haman. So what in the world is going on? Now you wonder why Ahasuerus couldn't sleep that night. Because here Esther is making strange requests, risking her life to invite him to a party, and then she says, Lo, and she says Lahem, and she still doesn't ask anything, and maybe it's all in his mind. You know, sometimes people say things and they're not really focused on every word, right? And I always tell people, what do you mean by that word? And I'll say, don't darshan me like I'm a Rishon, I'm not the Rambam. You just use a word, you can use this word, that word. Maybe it's all in his mind. She said, Lo, she meant Lahem. She said, Lahem, he meant Lacha, who knows? He's not reading from a script. Maybe it's all in his mind. Balayla hahu nodosh nasamelach. And she took advantage of something else as well. We see Haman, who had his own mental issues, shall we say, goes home. After being invited to this party again, he's very high, he's happy, he's joyous, sees Mordechai, he's enraged. Haman then tells his family about his wealth, his children. Of course the question is, why is he telling his family about his wealth and his children? You'd assume the family knows of his wealth, and they know of his children as well. They are his children. Because he's a little off. He's not thinking clearly anymore. Zeresh is thinking clearly. Zeresh says to him, I'll tell you what, you'll make an eitz govach hanishim amah, uvaboker amor lamelech, in the morning you go to the king, and you'll hang Mordechai and be done with it. Perfect plan. Does Haman follow the plan? No. What part of the plan doesn't he follow? The boker part. Had he slept on it, his world might have been a little different. Balailahu, that night, the king couldn't sleep. Who else couldn't sleep? Haman couldn't sleep. Didn't listen to Zeresh. Goes to the king in the middle of the night. Haman comes uninvited in the middle of the night. That makes Ahasuerus even more curious. And you see, as the story turns out, there are other dimensions with Mordechai. When Ahasuerus finally decides to kill Haman, it's because at first he suspected Haman of wanting Esther. And now Esther tells him, no, Haman wants to kill me, all right? And the Malach throws Mordechai on, Haman rather, on Esther's bed. And the king says, Hagam lechvoshes ha-malka imi babayis, you want to capture the queen in my own palace? Charvona comes, the tree, Haman prayer for Mordechai, Teluhu alav. Hang him. Done. What Ahasuerus responds to is not the outrage of Haman wanting to kill the Jews. It's the outrage of Haman wanting his queen. The seed that was sown by Esther when she said lo and then lohem, which Haman unfortunately played into when he shows up at the palace unannounced in the middle of the night. At the end of the story, Haman is hanged because Ahasuerus perceives him as a threat to the Malchus. But what happens then at the end of the story? Notice for a second, let's go to Pasuk Vav, I'm sorry, Perek Zayin, alright, Perek Zayin, Pasuk Dalet, Kinim Karnu Ani Ve'ami, L'Hashmid La'Rogu La'Beid, I and my people have been sold to destruction. The Ilu La'Vadim V'Lishvachosim Karnu Acharashti, if they just wanted to put us in slavery, would have said nothing. Ki Ein Atzor Sheveh Ben Ezek HaMelech, because the adversary is not worth the king's troubles. Alright? King says, Muzeveza, who is this person? She says, Haman Haraz, Haman. What doesn't Esther tell Ahasuerus? Where she's from. She still doesn't say where she's from. Kinim Karnu Aniva Ami. And again, we assume that Ahasuerus knew the name of the people that Haman wanted to kill, but for all he knew, he was killing someone else, some other people too. She doesn't tell him that. When does he tell him that? When does she tell him that, rather? It's another frightful moment in Perek Ches. And you wonder, what she's so nervous about now? Haman is dead, his sons are dead, they're dead. What is she so nervous about? Look at Perek Ches. Mordechai is now in charge of the palace. Pasuk Gimel. Vatosef Estel, now she comes to the king again, Vatipol Lefnei Raglov, and she falls before his feet. Vatev, she cries, Vatizchanimo, she pleads with him to reverse Mordechai's decree, Asher Chashav Al HaYehudim. Alright? What Mordechai wanted to do to the Jews. And then she says, if it pleased the king, and Vachosher the Lord's proper, Vatov Vani Ben Oven, you like me. Right, Yikasev Lashivas Asorim Machsheves Hamon Ben Hamdos Ogesher Kasav Labeid Es HaYehudim Machsher Bechol Medinos HaMelech. Here is where Esther reveals finally that she's a Jew. Kechocha Uchal V'Ra'isi B'Rosh Enetzos Ami Vechocha Uchal V'Ra'isi B'Avdan Molarati. Because how can I look away at the evil that might be done to my people? How could I not do anything in the destruction of my homeland? Those two words, Ami Umolarati, ring a bell? Yes. Lo Higido Esther Es Amo Ves Molata. This is where she reveals Amo Umolata. And again, the Megillah repeats the same thing. Ein Esther Mageres Es Molata Ves Amo Kasher Tzivo Lo Mordechai. Here she does. And when she does that, Ahasuerus agrees. Because now he sees that Esther really is selfless. And Mordechai is selfless. They're not interested in their one particular ethnic group, but in the betterment of the kingdom. Now that Esther comes clean, she pleads for Am, pleads for Moledes, and the story unfolds, the great Yeshua of Yud Gimel and Yud Dalet Adar. Brilliant plan, executed by brilliant people, and the Yad Hashem saw to its success. Shuasam Hayisa Lanesach. I thank you very much. Have a happy Purim. Okay, so you all know, you've seen these signs in the stores, right? Rule number one, the boss is always right. Rule number two, if the boss is wrong, see rule number one. Ahasuerus the same way. To revoke the decree means it was issued in error. To send a new decree, in fact, that's what he says. She asked L'Hashivis HaSfarim to recall them. And he said, no. Kisvu al Hayidim Katov Beneichem. You write another decree. A superseding decree, and that's what happened.